Recreation and Community Facilities, item 12.1. We have Privateer Days Commission for waiver of policy 58. Steve Burns would like to come forward to the presentation desk. Who would like to take the lead on 12.1? Deputy Mayor Kelly?
I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality agree to waive policy 58, consumption of alcohol on municipally owned property, at the request of Privateer Days Commission at Privateer Park, Liverpool, and Fort Point Lighthouse Park, Liverpool, between Friday, June 21st, 2019, and Sunday, June 23rd, 2019, that the applicant be required to submit proof of insurance of no less than $2 million per occurrence, with the Region of Queens Municipality as additional insured, and copy of the in-effect liquor license from the province of Nova Scotia to the region, and that all municipal, provincial, and federal laws be strictly adhered to.
Seconder for that? Councilor McLeod? Councilor McLeod, you're going to second? Yes.
I second.
Steve, would you like to give us a brief update on this item?
Sure. This is the annual request of the Privateer Day Commission for the beer tent services in Privateer Park and the allowance of alcohol at the historic encampment at Fort Point Lighthouse Park. And as stated, would have the requirements, insurance requirements, and permits as required.
Any questions or comments or councilors? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Moving on to 12.2, Boxing Rock Brewing Company for waiver of policy 58. We would like to take the lead on this. Deputy Mayor Kelly?
I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality agree to waive policy 58, consumption of alcohol in municipally owned properties at the request of Boxing Rock Brewing Company at Privateer Park, Liverpool, on August 24th and 25th, 2019. That the applicant be required to submit proof of insurance of no less than $2 million per occurrence with the Region of Queens Municipality as additional insured and copy of the in effect liquor license from the province of Nova Scotia to the region and that all municipal, provincial, and federal laws be strictly adhered to.
Second to that motion, Councilor Phillips. Would you like to give us a briefing on this?
Sure. And this request is for the August 24th and 25th Canadian Axe Throwing Championships to be held this year in Privateer Park. And this is similar to what Boxing Rock did last year during the inaugural event and was distributing samplers during the event. And this falls under their NSLC permitting, and they're required to provide insurance as stated.
Any questions or comments of council on this one? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Prior to going to 13.0 planning, I'd like to take a 10-minute recess and let everybody stretch their legs. We will resume council meeting. Mike McLeod, our director of planning, is at the presentation desk. We will move on now to 13.0 planning. And the first item on the planning is 13.1 rezoning request, 3 White Point Road in Liverpool. We have a recommendation there. Who would like to take the lead on this? Councilor Muse?
I move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality give notice of the intention to rezone PID number 7002482 from restricted residential R1 to neighborhood commercial C3. And that a public hearing be held on June 25th, 2019 in the Council Chambers of the Municipal Building, 249 White Point Road in Liverpool, Nova Scotia at 9 a.m.
Seconder for that, Councilor Phillips. Mike, would you like to give us a brief update?
Yep, this is a little background. The region has received a request from the owners of property located at 3 White Point Road in Liverpool to have the property rezoned from its current restricted residential R1 to the neighborhood commercial C3. It's the intent of the new owner to convert the currently vacant building to an art studio, which would fall under the classification of an arts and crafts shop under the land use bylaw. So as I had indicated, the property is currently zoned as restricted residential R1, which does not permit this type of use under the current zoning. So in order for council to be able to, or staff to be able to consider this use, that a rezoning to the neighborhood commercial C3 would be required. Council has established policy under its planning strategy whereby it can consider the rezoning of residential designations to the neighborhood commercial C3, so there is enabling policy for this request. So the property in question, I think everyone's pretty familiar with the property. It's the former Hank's Variety convenience store, which had operated at this location dating back to the 60s, I believe. The convenience store operation ceased in 2014, and the ownership of that property was transferred. It was the intent of the property owner at that time to convert the former convenience store to a residential dwelling. However, that change of use didn't take place, so the property's essentially been vacant since that time. So the property has again changed hands, and it's the intent of the current owner to operate a arts and crafts studio from that location. So looking at the property, there has been work done to the rear of the current structure to accommodate some off-site parking. The owner intends to move the entrance to the building from facing the street at White Point Road to the side of the building. There have been concern expressed in the past with people, public walking out onto the side of a busy road. So the current owner is looking at addressing that. So the application had come before a planning advisory committee who gave a review as well as did a site visit to look at the property, and it's certainly their feeling that a rezoning back to the neighborhood commercial C3 is a reasonable request and recommends in favor of the application.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions or comments of councillors? Councillor McLeod?
Mike, just a clarification under the craft shop meeting. If Ms. Brown decides at some point she wants to have the customers coming and going, that she would qualify under the existing.
That's right. Under the uses? That's right. Yeah. I guess under the definition of the craft shop, it allows for the offering of sale of goods to the general public. So that's permitted.
So she wanted to open on a daily basis in that respect.
And I think it's the intent right now is that she's not going to have regular hours for the public, that if somebody wants to buy something, it's by appointment, so it's not going to be the coming and going that you would have seen with the convenience store, but that opportunity is there should she decide to go that route in the future.
Doesn't have to make any application, right? It can just be a stamp.
That's right, yep.
Any other councillor? Are you ready for the question? Questions? All those in favor of the motion? Is it unanimous? Thank you. We move on to 13.2, Solid Waste Management Bylaw Amendment. Who wants to take the lead on 13.2? Councilor Fisk.
That the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality give first reading to Bylaw Number 13, Solid Waste Management Bylaw.
Seconded for that, Councilor Kingsley.
Yes, you'll recall from last summer, council passed a motion and staff brought forward a report respecting illegal dumping and fine levels. And council at that time passed a motion requesting the summary offense ticket schedule or the fine levels be amended to allow for an increased fine level for illegal dumping. Following council's recommendation, information was sent off to municipal affairs to have those changes done, at which time we were notified that the changes in order to become effective would require actual amendments to the solid waste bylaw to affect those changes under the summary offense ticket regulations of the province. So staff have been back and forth with the municipal affairs as well as the Department of Justice to ensure that the amendments that we were proposing to the bylaw are going to pass muster with Department of Justice and allow us the ability to enforce summary offense tickets for the increased fine levels. So at the same time, we were discussing the changes with the province. We're also discussing other potential changes. If we're going to go through and amend the bylaw, we would consult with our engineering works department to see what other changes may be required to the bylaw. So we did it all at once. So attached to the staff report is a copy of the draft bylaw with the highlights, with highlighted amendments there too. I'll just point out that the main clause that deals with the increased fine levels for illegal dumping is under section 69A of the draft bylaw. So all the changes, amendments are highlighted.
Any comments or questions of councilors? This is first reading. Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. 13.3, Global Positioning System, GPS. Who would like to take the lead on 13.3? Councilor Johnson?
I'd like to recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality give approval for the unbudgeted expenditure of $7,895 plus HST for the acquisition of a Trimble Geo7X handheld GPS unit to be funded from general operating surplus.
Seconded for that motion? Councilor Fisk? I'd like to put this on that one.
Yes, I guess the global positioning system, that's really piece of equipment that our department uses essentially on a daily basis for the acquisition of various spatial data, be it civic numbers, identifying new structural development, locating illegal dump sites, that sort of thing. It's a piece of equipment that our department uses on a regular basis and is essentially utilized by the various departments of the municipality. The current unit was acquired back in 2005 and has worked well since that time. However, the unit is no longer functioning and it's a necessary piece of equipment for the department. And the fact that we didn't budget for its replacement under this year's budget, requesting the budgeted replacement of that unit, so in the amount of $7,900 plus HST.
Any comments or questions, councilors? Councilor Fancy?
Yes, this new, of course, all I see GPS and all that other stuff is kind of it's Greek to me, but I understand that a lot of times it's just a little handheld there, not always accurate, you know. So, is this one be more accurate for
absolutely. It's sub-meter accuracy. It's usually within a foot or so. It's not like your regular Canadian Tire geocaching or whatever GPS. It's not survey grade. You're not getting millimeter accuracy, but for all intents that we use it for, it's certainly more than adequate as far as that accuracy goes. So. It's not top of the line, but it certainly meets our needs. So,
Deputy Mayor Kelly?
So one of the things that you said, I misread the report, was that you use it every single day. So is it under regular maintenance, or is it just broke?
Yeah.
Because you use it every day, so it's not like people
really forgot
about it.
And it's made. They're a fairly rugged piece of equipment. They're made for field work, but it was 14 years old. And in discussions that we've had with the supplier, it's antiquated technology. It's just getting replacement parts is near impossibility.
Which brings me to my second question. Does this sort of now alert your department, like, that maybe you should have, like, they do in engineering, they'll set, like, a schedule of replacement for these particular items so that we can budget for them properly?
And certainly that's something that we should consider, because they're not overly large ticket items, but they're not
exactly
small ticket items either. So, yeah, no, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Councilor McLeod?
And it states here, Mike, that the current software is compatible with this new unit, or is there something that you can upgrade the current?
No, and that's why we'd like to stay with the Trimble product. It's a reliable product, but it's compatible with the software. So if we went with another company, we'd have to get new software as well.
And then training and all that as well.
So.
Any other councilor have a question or a comment? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It's unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. 14.0 reports. Under 14.1, we have the council.
Sorry, just before Mike leaves, can I ask him a question about our civic numbering system?
That's a different issue. It's not on the agenda. I'd ask you to speak with them outside of council if you would. You have a really long day, Councilor McBride. But thank you for your input. So we have council implementation report. Any comments or questions of councilors on this? CAO, do you have any comments? It's been circulated. Everyone's had the chance to look at it. We're winding down on some of these issues, and it's a good thing that they're being completed. Moving on to 14.2, accessibility discussion. Councilor Kainsey, I think you wanted to have this discussion.
Yes. What I'd like to be able to do is some different things we can be able to bring up for discussion and be able to know where we are. And a lot of our council was up to Truro a couple weeks ago, and one was a part, of course, of it was the accessibility. And I know from being on different groups and such is that by 2030 there's going to be a lot of things that have to be in compliance. And it's funny when you talk about to other people about what's compliance, no one seems to know exactly what compliance is going to mean for every different thing. It could be with housing, or what you're going to have in the housing, especially when we talk about the Western Housing Authority and such as. It's nothing seems to be in place, but it's not too far away to 2030. So as we look at that, I like to think of what the region has done so far, and I like the part of displays that we put on the sidewalks, which is helps people with the visibility issue to be able to not trip. I think our CAO is going forward to make it expand more area than what we had originally asked for. I thank you for that. The lights now over by Bristol, they now have the new switches in. And the switches, which was it doesn't mean a whole lot, but on those switches it'll say that the people were having problems before. And I've had many people ask me. They say they press the button to go across, and they get up there three or four steps and it turns red, and then they get scared. Should they turn back or should they be going forward? Well, the answer would be is that nobody else can come on into the crosswalk now, because that's the last of the time that the people can enter into the crosswalk. But it never said that there. These new buttons will tell you that. So now that's going to help a lot. I've had numerous times people ask me that. Now that's already explained on these new buttons. I really like that. We still haven't got the audible to it yet. And I don't know if you fellows have heard anything yet or when the audible is supposed to take place. But the
CAO, do you have an update on this?
Okay. But that part itself is a good thing right away, so people understand that it says that when the red light, when you enter into the crosswalk and the red light comes on, that you will see to the finish, but no one will enter into the crosswalk. So now it's very very much there, so people will understand, just because we got a very short crosswalk time. I personally have brought forth a couple things concerning accessibility, and that's of course with the town bridge and that side and the walks along going across the town bridge. Again, these are things that have to be on our radar, not just say, well, we'll look at it someday, because I know we've talked about, well, maybe next budget we'll look at this and such as that. But I believe we have a serious problem with things like that. Somebody have stepped off there, it would be maybe history, because there's no way to come back because it's a foot drop down. You'd be in trouble. So we'd ask about that. The other thing over in Town Hall, we've now the Acadia First Nations have vacated the premises. But one of the things they always had asked for all along, and they asked me 4 or 5 different times, they needed some way to be able to say that coming into that part of the building, they needed to be able to put it around the province to say they were fully accessible, and they never could. Front steps becomes the issue of sometimes of people getting up. Even if you park up by the road, there's a lip up there to people who try to get out, because I've heard Shirley Francis talk to me about those two things in particular, getting out of her car and then getting up those steps. So, I had made a suggestion of putting in that room where the Acadia First Nation was, there's a 36-inch window, and we could put a door there and put a ramp from the back up to it. But I've never, ever received answers. Just like to know where they are, you know, where we are with them. If it's a no, it's a no.
Well, Councillor Fancy, I can maybe help you a little bit on that. We've reformatted the washroom off of council chambers here,
right,
to become fully accessible.
Right.
We applied to the province for cost sharing.
That's right.
We were successful in that taxpayers in the region of Queens were approximately 50% of the cost, and the province the other 50%. Accessibility in Nova Scotia is coming forward. There will be programs, there will be funding for the region of Queens to, at this point, this early, put in a wheelchair ramp on the town hall, when there would be funding programs coming out in the very near future for that. It would not be wise use of taxpayers' dollars. So the decision has been made, yes or no. I would suspect that we're looking to see what programs are there at the present time and in the near future. And we would certainly look at embracing those funding programs. But I have a question for the CAO. Has the legislation passed at this point, CAO?
Yes and no. So the legislation has gone through the House and been approved, but hasn't been proclaimed yet. And so the way it works in Nova Scotia is it's through first reading, second reading, third reading, and that has to get proclaimed by the Lieutenant Governor. So, and so that hasn't taken place yet. The plan right now, my understanding is they plan to proclaim it in the fall, this fall, October, November. And so if they do that, then there's a 1-year time frame to set up a committee and have a plan, and then there's the 2030 deadline to have things done. The province has some other timelines as well, 2022, 2023, somewhere around
yes,
there. I think like a restaurant, like the little pizzeria, the bathrooms in the basement, they'll be required to have a bathroom upstairs that's accessible in the building, which will be a significant expense. Or the province may force them to close down. I'm not sure what the rules are going to be. The challenge right now is the province has established a committee, an accessibility committee, who are trying to come up with the terms and conditions as to what the standards are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And until they come up with those rules, there's nothing for us to do, because we can go make improvements, make changes, and then they may come back and say change the rules are different, and then you rip it all over and start over. So there will be some properties where in the future we'll probably be able to make more accessible. And there's ones like Town Hall that may never be accessible. You can put a ramp along the side of the building or whatever, but it's a national heritage property, so it may be prohibited in order for that purpose. I'm not sure. Some of them are going to be cost prohibitive. So I know, I think in the past, somebody looked at Town Hall, it was over $250,000 to do that on the Town Hall. And so, can we afford to do that? Can we afford to do that? Can other municipalities in Nova Scotia afford to do those types of things for the buildings that are, weren't built for accessibility.
Yes, yes.
So lots of discussions to take place. We're away from that. Councilor Fancy mentioned some things. We put in 25 years ago an accessible fishing ramp down Meadow Pond Lane down here. We put in accessible boardwalks at Peach Meadows Beach, Hunt Point Beach, some of the other properties we got. Some of them got destroyed by the storms and stuff, but some of those are still in place. We put those in place 25 years ago. We were way ahead of the curve back then. And so there's still lots of work to do. And so what's going to be required is the province is requiring the municipality to come with a plan. And so once they proclaim the legislation, once the accessibility committee comes up with what the rules and standards are going to be, they'll come forward with our plan, look at all these different structures we have, all the properties we have, and determine the plan as to what we can do and what those costs are going to be over the next 10 years, because it will be a 10-year plan. The challenge for us, I mean, we have some financial resources to help us. The challenge is going to be, how is the private sector going to do that? And so as the mayor said, there, we expect to be some funding programs available, but if you think Nova Scotia, it's very inaccessible right now. And so if you've got 10,000, 100,000 businesses, and a lot of them have to be accessible in order to meet the new standards, it's going to be a lot of businesses closed in Nova Scotia unless the provincial government, the federal government, offers a lot of money.
Cool.
Do that, and then you're going to have to hire carpenters and people that have the understanding of what those designs are. You're going to have to do designs, you're going to have to do construction. It's not going to happen by 2030. The province can have great aspirations, but it's not going to happen. Even if you look at the construction industry now, if you want to hire a construction person, today it's very difficult to find someone to work for a small project, unless you've got a massive project. And even some of the bigger ones, I know if you look at some of the big infrastructure projects, I was talking to an engineer the other day, and you can't find a mason in Nova Scotia for the most part for any big projects. There's one company building all the masonry work in Nova Scotia right now. There's nobody else that will do it. And so that's only going to get worse with all these projects. So we know locally it's hard to find contractors and stuff because they're also busy. So it is a work in progress, and so we have to define what's accessibility. So you talked about the bridge railing. That's not an accessibility issue, that's a safety issue. And so we've got to define what's accessibility issue versus what's a safety issue, what's a public interest issue. So I'm expecting the province will come forward with some general guidelines. I'm not sure how detailed they'll be, but we need to see that information before we can actually move forward. But we'll continue to work. Our plan is to potentially have a in terms of reference for a committee later in the year after we understand what the final requirement for the province is going to be in October, November. So we'll plan to have something ready. We'll start the real work on developing a plan in 2020, I would expect.
Yes, I have some others on the list. We'll go back to Councilor Fancy for follow-up.
Yes. Okay, so with the town hall, if we're going to bring someone in there, even going to try to rent that, even if there isn't rules in place saying that, again, we have to look at it as a heritage building. If we take that 36-inch window up, put a 36-inch door in, how could it be, or is it are we allowed to do it to make it as a heritage house or stuff? I don't know if it's ever been approached. I know I've asked several times to say if we could even look at that, because that's one thing that was a real something keen for Acadia First Nations, because they could not make it fully accessible. And so is that going to be a problem going forward with anybody else we would want to try to rent to?
From my knowledge of accessibility doorways, 36 inches is not wide enough, so it would have to be a larger opening.
Yeah.
But how wide the opening would be is the regulation requirement. It would require more structural work in the building than just removing the door.
It may or may not, because the bathroom doors have to be 36 inches, so I don't. That's all I go by.
There's been lots of discussion before about elevators and things. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. Peter wants an elevator to go up to the second floor for seating. All that stuff is very expensive, and so we have to determine what the regulations are going to be and whether there's a need for to make that building accessible and what the use is going to be. And so it's going to be all the decisions. We're going to have a big long list of all these things.
Absolutely.
And then council's going to have to prioritize what we can do and what's reasonable to do.
Yeah.
And some of them potentially, as I said, across Nova Scotia, it's simply going to say that building is never going to be accessible. Not going to be humanly possible to do it at a reasonable cost.
But also, too, with town hall, we talked about a lift to go upstairs. Is that something which would be a far less expensive? Would that meet regulations of what we could do to be able to put a chairlift in there?
It's a heritage building, and they have regulations. The stairwell The staircase is one of the prime examples of that construction, so it's federal approval in that situation.
But have we asked?
No, we haven't, because we don't know what the programs are, and we're way ahead of the game here. We don't even have legislation at this point.
Yeah.
But I guess the challenge is we have budget time, and we discuss all projects. This was never discussed at budget time. And so now to all of a sudden say, are we doing this, are we reviewing this, are we looking at this, it's $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to hire consultants and engineers to come in and do design work and all the structural work and all that stuff. And so we can't just all of a sudden now decide we're going to do all this work, and that's what we talked about today. Well, this stuff is not budgeted. If we're going to do these things, and council has to agree to these things at this outset of budget, and then put the financial resources in the budget to cost these things out and decide whether it's feasible or not, and then council make a decision. But to have general discussions about, well, I talked about a lift before, and I talked about things, hasn't happened because council hasn't given clear direction. That's what we want to do.
Okay. Let's get back here to where it is. Wait till I finish, and then you can chop me down and slap me on the fingers and things. The whole idea is, as I'm bringing forward this, is saying that these are things, when I talk about accessibility, these are things that, you know, that we brought forward, and just as have we approached anybody, or have we done anything? I'm not saying it's spending money right at this particular time, because what I'm really looking at is that we come back to the region and say, okay, can we develop a plan going forward? I'm not saying it has to be done this year, but have a plan going forward of what we're going to do, and any requests that we could look at, if we could say, well, this would never fit in the first place, or this could work, that we'd have a plan as to we go forward and saying, maybe even a time frame of what we'd like to try to do. Some things you can't put on a time frame because you don't know, but at least have a plan going forward to what we'd like to do. Because when a question gets asked and you don't get an answer, you don't know where it is. So if we all are collectively together saying, hey, can that window fit there? And say, no, we've already talked to the heritage, and they say, no, we can't do that. Or it has to be 40 inches wide instead of 36. Or even if we don't go forward, it's just getting answers back that we can get a report back to understand where we are, what we have, a report going forward, and maybe a time frame on something. What we can put time frames on. Not everything can be. That's what I'm asking for. Not spending money this year. If you guys would let me finish, I would have told you that I'm not looking for the money this year. I'm looking at what we're looking at as the future.
Would you like me to respond now?
Well, might as well.
The issue of chasing Ottawa on heritage status and asking them if this is okay, or asking someone else if this is okay, prior to the actual legislation being completed through the legislature in the province, means that we're asking questions without knowing what the regulations, what the policies are. Ottawa is going to require a specific ask, specific construction details, or we're going to write them back again. So yes, we can have staff chasing these issues without knowing exactly what the answer and requirement would be, and then do it over. So I would suggest to you that when we do this process, we will need to have a list of all the locations and all of the issues, and then proceed with them to find out what is possible and how it would be done. And as the CAO said, it's time and money to do that process, and I think from what I'm understanding of where the legislation is today, it's premature to do that research work and write those letters and make those inquiries. It's a valuable issue moving forward, but what I'm seeing is we'd end up doing it several times.
I disagree, because I think asks can be asked just to find out what the regulations say. You don't have to do a formal ask. A person can call and ask what can be done. That's not a formal ask. You can find out. If you're going to make a formal ask, then you're already going forward to what you're going to do. It's not a problem that call a carpenter and say, can you fix my bedroom, and he tells me how much money it's going to be, rather than say, I'm making a formal ask. You can ask, and then you go by the scope of what you want to do.
CAO, would you like to respond?
Not unless he's finished, because he didn't want me interrupting him. So, are you finished?
No, don't get that way. No,
but I'm trying to be respectful here.
You're right, but that's what I'm saying. I was saying that when I was reading the standard, but by the way, it came to the end, then you would know that So it, that's, I understand where you're coming from, because you're thinking, hey, where are we going with this? And, you know, oh no, our budget's already in, we're going way over budget, but what's he asking for? But it, I'm not asking for anything. We can't destroy our budget where we are.
Seal?
It's the magnitude of what you're asking for is substantial.
Absolutely.
And so this isn't a simple thing of hiring a carpenter or asking a carpenter what it's going to cost. Because the carpenter's going to say, I need the designs. I need to understand. So if you want to know what the rules are, we can go to our building inspector and he can tell you what the building code regulations say about accessibility.
Right.
But when you start modifying a building, he requires an architect or an engineer to design that,
right,
to do that to the specs. And so we don't have an in-house person who's an expert on accessibility. I mean,
right,
our engineer put together, went through the specs and figured out what the rules were to do the washroom here.
Right.
But if you're going to modify a national historic site, you're going to have to hire an independent expert who understands the building code, understands the historical character of the building, understands what you're trying to do. You're going to have to move mechanical systems, electrical systems, wiring systems, all those types of things. It's not something you just hire a carpenter to do. You've got to actually hire a person and pay them. You're probably going to pay somebody $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to come up with all the designs to tell you what the rules are, but then design it. So then you can then send it to a carpenter or put it and price it out. And so the issue is, we're not at the stage where we know what that is going to look like.
Right.
So do we know we want to fix the front entrance? Do we want to know we put an entrance on the side? The Astor Theater Society talked about are discussing an extension on the back. So is that the opportunity to do it? And what does that look like? And so they asked for funding from us last year to help do a study, and we agreed to give them $3,000, $4,000, but they didn't get any money from the province to help, so that study went away. But they had to hire an independent engineer as well to do those designs. They couldn't just go to a carpenter and do those types of things. So I understand what you're discussing, but it's much bigger than simply asking someone to give you a price on something. Because council has to agree that this is the design for the restructure of that building they want to see.
Right.
And then you've got to hire an expert, the engineer, the electrical, the mechanical, all those types of things,
right,
to come up with that design, to then go to market, go to tender on, or hire somebody to give you a price on. So it's way more complicated than hire somebody to fix your bedroom.
So I'll come back to you, Councillor Kennedy. I have some others that we can answer. Councillor Johnson?
Oh, okay. Well, I'd like to, first of all, like to get some clarification as to item 14.2, because to me, that's a discussion item which allows us to have these discussions without getting defensive and all this other sort of stuff. And it just so happens that the discussion item today is accessibility. Hopefully in the next agenda, it will be something else that is pressing. Today's agenda item on accessibility is very fitting in light of the fact that it's accessibility. And what I heard is that, yes, somewhere in the back there, we have a plan or some kind of a process to move forward. The fact that we're getting into the weeds with carpenters and stuff like that, that's a far cry from where we are. And we need to be able to, like I said, do, and you had mentioned about doing an inventory, setting some kind of a standard, and we heard Rick Hansen speak very eloquently. I'm sure Rick Hansen's group and the gold standard that he set somewhere along the line deal with heritage buildings, you know, that we can deal with that side of it. But also here at the region, I'm privy to the draft policy on recreation for all, and that speaks to a committee that's being drafted or put together to look at the recreation facilities in an inventory. I think that should be ratcheted up, and it's something that we can be doing now ahead of the curve for the legislation, ahead of the curve, that things that we're going to have to do anyway, like the inventory, what is the status, and which ones have a priority. We can do all that without getting into the nails, turning the wrenches and driving the nails and things like that, so that we have a plan and we are ready to move forward when the time comes, based on some kind of priority. Because we're losing, from what I understand, we're losing a tenant at the town hall because of accessibility. I know that there are potential tenants who are going to need more than what we have there now, even at a at a short-term fix, but if it means putting somebody in there and having a business, and I've had a whole lot of other concerns about the town hall side of it, but that doesn't deal with all accessibility. But I like the idea that I heard we have a plan. I know that there is something in the works that we don't want to be writing the policy that boxes us in, you know, going forward. And the fact that there's things that we can be doing, and I think if we draft this and put together this committee to start looking at short-term, long-term plans, how it links to finances, next year's budget, and the rules and regulations, and setting a standard, not just a building code standard, a standard that deals with accessibility for all, not just the physically handicapped. There's more here to take into consideration for that. And adopt that and start looking at it going forward for the next council in a year and a half's time. I think that's where we should be. And I applaud the idea of having these discussion items on our agenda, that we can have those open discussions where we couldn't. It's the only forum we have to speak to this stuff and speak to it, like I said, in a respectful way. And not to get defensive. Nobody wants to get defensive. We want to build a plan to move the region forward, to something that we can be proud of at the end of the day. So whoever got it on the agenda, kudos to them. And the accessibility piece is a very timely piece. And instead of ready, shoot, aim, let's have a plan and priorities as to what we deal with first and foremost. But let's not waste the time of just doing recreation. And because they're going to run into the exact same things that one of the things I've heard here 1,000 times is the handrails at the Ameri Center. You know, there's no good for that group to go forward and put something in if it's like you said, Chris, the legislation or the standard that we're going to work towards, not have to get there today, but work towards, it's in our focus, and not waste our resources and valuable staff time and things like that. So that's all I had to add to the conversation, discussion, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Councilor Johnson. Deputy Mayor Kelly?
Yes, I wanted to just ask, wanted to make a comment about, it's nice to know as well, businesses in downtown right now, I mean, they're improving and putting in, coming up to code for accessibility as they improve now. So it's nice to know that within our building permits, our building codes, that they have to put in accessible washrooms now going forward. So they're pretty much already taken care of, unless there's anything else that comes forward in the legislation that they have to take care of. The other thing was about the accessibility plan for 2030. Would it be your assumption that when you talk about maybe we never be able to make the town hall accessible, is that at some point in the future with the new legislation that there would be a provision to apply for exemption, and you put in your reasons why, and there would probably be an exemption clause, because as you said, if you can't make it so that it would always be exempt from being accessible, and then we could sort of end the conversation that because of cost and stuff like that, that the province would give out exemptions by 2030?
CAO?
I'm not privy to the discussion of the province at the present time.
Yeah.
I expect there won't be an exemption. I expect they'll simply say they want Nova Scotia fully accessible, but they'll say fully accessible to a certain degree.
Right, okay.
I expect to say 100% accessible isn't going to happen.
But they wouldn't.
No different, they talk about we want Nova Scotia to be completely broadband. There's always a special asterisk, 90% or 95% within a certain whatever.
Yeah.
So I expect the standards that they come up with will say a certain building, whether it's a cost amount that has to bring it up, or whether it's a certain building,
right,
or a certain amount of renovation or whatever, they'll say you have to bring it up to a certain standard. And say there's 5 levels of accessibility, let's bring it up to level 3.
Yeah.
But you'll never have to meet level 5 or something like that. I expect there'll be some
grades. Okay.
So I don't think there'll be any exemptions, but I think there won't be a requirement that everything is completely and fully accessible to everybody.
Right. And that's good to know too, because that means that you have the ability to say, okay, we can't afford it up to that point, but we can get it to that point. But after that, then it would be basically with the time scale of 2030, future councils, like 2 more councils into our future, because that's only 8 years away, a future council could decide that, you know, they do want to pay, you know, $250,000 and completely make our, maybe Queens County will be booming by then and taxes will be through the roof and they have tons of money to deal with and they want to choose to make the town hall accessible, fully accessible at that time, which would be great. Could you also comment on the fact, do you have any knowledge of, we all know that Wolfville got the presentation of the gold standard for the Rick Hansen, what is it called? Rick Hansen,
Goldstein?
No, but what's his, he's a
foundation.
For their accessibility strategy. It's a strategy, isn't it? It's an accessibility strategy that they've come up with. So it's not a plan, it's just a strategy about how they're going to produce a plan later on, right? How did they come up with that then if we don't currently have legislation in Nova Scotia finalized?
Yeah.
They just established a committee. Like we have a planning advisory committee, we have a heritage advisory committee. They just established a committee a year or so ago and came up with the strategy.
Strategy, yeah.
I've looked at it, it's very general.
Yeah.
It's of no, it's not something that we would typically adopt here. We need a plan to actually implement things.
Right.
Theirs is a high level thing. So they just, because they were first out of the gate, they got an award for being first out of the gate.
Right.
And so it's very high level. It's not something you can take and use to implement anything today.
Right. So that's really all we're talking about here is maybe a strategy going forward that this is what we're going to deal with, very high level. But again, I understand it's staff time and until we know exactly what we're doing. And exactly, if you create a strategy now, you have to be prepared to put funding behind it in order to take it forward.
I mean, the strategy talks about you need to implement changes to the built environment. So building, common sense.
Yes.
The strategy needs to talk about social media, print media, those types of things, the visually impaired, braille, those types of things,
yes.
Different languages.
Yes.
So it's... There's nothing.
Site specific.
Yeah, but there's nothing that's revolutionary in there.
No.
It's simply, most of it's simply common sense. Put in
all
some paragraphs.
All those things that we're
going to
look at. Yeah.
Yeah, and programs or services, whatever the headings might be, that we need to consider these types of things. It's basic information that's available now. There's no.
Yeah. Gives a great idea though to the scope. Of what we're actually, which is kind of good to understand, is the scope of what it would mean for Queens County going forward for accessibility, sort of. Or, like you say, for Wolfville, the town of Wolfville, the scope of what you're talking about. Because a lot of people think of accessibility, they think of wheelchairs, they think of getting around from one place to another, but they don't think about those things like, deaf and blind people and what they would need to get around in the community as well.
And so those categories that I talked about, those headings, were already established by the province. So Wolfville just
right.
took those categories and put a couple sentences under each one to flush them out a little bit.
Right.
And so Wolfville's the same as the rest of us. They're waiting to see what the rules and regulations from the accessibility committee and what the province adopts.
Right.
And then they'll actually go ahead and let everybody else and come up with a formal plan.
Right.
Things like that. So nice and important strategy, but I don't see a value in us doing that at the present time.
Right.
So.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman.
Well, I think my thoughts have been cemented in all the other comments by the council, but I really feel that when you think about accessibility with our assets here, I think the first building that comes to mind, of course, is the town hall, smaller town hall. And I think it is a designated a federal heritage or provincial heritage?
National
heritage. Is there any, I mean, that was designated many years ago, and I don't know really what purpose that is now. It seems to be a detriment to anything we want to do with that building with respect to modification and adhering to the standards that are going to be set for accessibility. So this is the question. Is it possible to have that heritage removed from that significant?
Certainly is. Wouldn't be staff bring forward a recommendation like that, though.
Well, okay, what do you mean by like that? I mean, what's the purpose of it now?
Mike can explain when it was done, probably. And
I guess that property is both designated as a national historic site. It's also designated provincially as a provincial heritage property. Really, the provincial designation probably has more to it than the actual national designation.
there is provision under the Heritage Property Act whereby the owner of the designated heritage property applied to the province to have that property basically declassified as a heritage property. Certainly, as an expression of the level of staff recommendation here, it is designated to preserve the building on the selection area to the community. Staff recommend that the registered property is actually ready to be one of that caliber. So is there a possibility that's moved, but certainly.
So, can I continue?
Yes.
So, relieving us of all of the standards and all of the way that modifications can be done, because it is a financial hardship on us to do that because of the new standards that have come with accessibility and that sort of thing. Years ago, it probably would be easy to do, but now, because provincial government and the federal government with their accessibility standards and regulations are very harder to do because of the costs involved in that. So that was just my thought, and having to relieve ourselves of having to go through big expenses for a building that is certainly important to us, but it prevents us because of the use of the building now. It's not a museum, it's a usable building from the public's perspective. So, and it's preventing us from doing certain things in that building, or preventing our community from benefiting from that if we have all of these requirements that, you know, that are costly to improve it, to make it more accessible. So that was my thought.
Mike, did you have a follow-up on that?
I guess just as a comment, any alterations, and I guess under Heritage Property Act, there's a section that deals with the alterations to designated heritage property. So once we can have initial discussions with the province to see if it essentially goes to their provincial heritage advisory committee, they will recommend changes to the designated property. So perhaps it's not an issue. That's a new legislation that you have. I'm sure there must be something somewhere that is either part management or nature that they have to take into consideration to the Heritage Property Act and the system. So I'm sure those discussions are in the area that we're taking place.
Yeah.
Thank you. Councilor Frederick next.
Well, I just want to talk about, I think there's different levels of accessibility that we need to be thinking about. And I just heard the CEO say that, you know, accessibility is required, and that's one thing, but the advantages of being acknowledging accessibility issues for a town like Wolfville is a perception, is that people moving in, knowing that it's a priority for us, whether there's regulations or not regulations, that everything we do, we try to focus on accessibility, and that is from painting, you know, the displays or whatever, that becomes first and foremost. I don't think it's always comes down to money. I think it's also a feeling of that everything we do should reflect back on that. So that makes us more appealing to a lot of people moving in, and makes us, an example. And I'll go back to Wolfville again. I mean, that was a nice thing they got, but it also did a lot for, you know, everyone in the province now knows that Wolfville is ahead of the game. Whether they made any changes, it's up there, and they're listening, and they're talking about it. And so it's more of a feeling that you create when you accept accessibility, because what we've been doing is band-aiding. We've been rushing from here. It took us years to get those things painted. It took a year and a half to get the ramp built inside the Astor Theater that people could actually come down to the bar and get their tickets. Everything has been kind of piecemeal together. So if we're putting together a committee, an accessibility committee, I think there's so much that we could be doing up front, as Councillor Johnson said, but there's also things that we could be doing on a day-to-day basis just to encourage that, to know that there's know, many different smaller options that we could be doing, because it's not always about money, and it's not always comes down to, you know, you have to spend a lot of cash to be able to do this stuff. So I think there's a great advantage to being that, and if we're looking for ways to put Liverpool on the map, it's no different than anything else. It should all be connected. Everything we do should be connected. So, but I do have a comment about the town hall. We've been kind of hiding behind that historical building forever. We still have no signage on the building. We tried to get a roof over the accessible entrance in the back for years. We were told we couldn't do that because of it was a heritage building. After many years, now there's a cover over it. We were able to change the door. So we shouldn't have to work that hard to get something that is so valuable to so many members of our community. Shirley Francis is prime example. That woman has talked for the last 5 years, 6 years, about being able to get out of her car and not have to step over, which she can't do, one cement barrier. That is not going to cost thousands of dollars to replace. That is something we could be doing that would help her and so many people like her. But yet we still refuse to look at that issue. And it's going to take someone falling or just not simply coming into the building to be able to do it. So if you put yourself in the mindset of accessibility, we do better and we're doing a lot of things great. Don't get me wrong. But it puts us all in a place where accessibility is at the forefront of everything we do. And we haven't done that in the past. And therefore, we've spent a lot of time trying to correct the problems. And that's really sad in 2019 that we're correcting problems that should have been, you know, when we started in 2000, many of us in 2012, should have been the topic of conversation then. So I think that moving forward, let's not wait for a committee. Let's not wait for the rules. Let's just do it. There's the Rick Hansen, we have members of our community that are taking the course. They are certified. They could be helping us doing and pointing out the things that are available, things that we could be doing that are small, that makes so much change to the thing, like the what Jack has brought forward with the light and the sound that helps so many people. That was not a big deal. That got passed like that. So what can we be doing now? So I recommend that we get a committee together and help concerned citizens and be able to move forward right away, and let's not wait.
Thank you, Councilor Curley. I have Deputy Mayor Kelly.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing I wanted to mention is that when we do projects, not just specific to updating a bathroom for accessibility, but when we actually do major projects in the community, do we have a tick box that looks at accessibility and say, what can we do now? What can we incorporate now into this project that allows us to be more accessible?
See,
nothing will work.
Okay, thank you.
Any other councillor that hasn't commented on this discussion before I go back to Councillor Fancy? Councillor Fancy, did you have any follow-up?
No, I think, well, it's what we've all discussed. I think it's just a matter of taking an inventory of what we have in the region of Queens, know what our priorities are, and to be able to see what we can do, as Councillor Perlick said, easy, and then whatever is hard, what we have to do look forward into the future. This is a plan, and sometimes it may be that you maybe have a plan, and I just don't know. So, but it's, and maybe that could be part of it. But that's why we're here discussing accessibility.
Well, thank you all. Enlightening discussion today for sure. 15.0 in camera are next. A motion to go in camera would be in order. By Deputy Mayor Kelly, seconded by Councillor Johnson. Any questions?
Question.
For the question, all those in favor? All those in favor going in camera? Thank you, it's unanimous. We'll take a 5-minute recess.